I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. I think it makes a lot of sense to tell you that I'm recording this in that excellent country called Canada.
Yeah, we're so dedicated to this podcast, we've sent you away.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I'm in Montreal right now, but I will say, and I don't know if people in Toronto in particular, Ontario generally, if this resonates positively with them or not, but I think that Montreal is a fantastic city.
I've never been there, but I've heard good things.
It's fantastic. It's not overpriced, and the cuisine is excellent.
Not overpriced relative to what?
I think relative to Canada, I don't know. I think it's cheaper than Toronto, is what okay. I can tell you.
Yeah. Toronto's okay. Expensive. Yeah.
Dave, let me tell you what who we are. Allow me to tell you who we are and what this okay. is.
Yes.
This is the
Who Pitch am Talk I, Carson?
Blue Jay. This is the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast. You are Dave Cameron. You're a managing editor for Fangraphs.com.
Oh, that's good news.
Yes, I'm Carson Sestouli. I'm something less than that, yeah. Although I am employed by Fangraphs.com as well. Of course, Fangraphs, or Fangraphs, depending how you would like to treat the vowel in that particular case, is dedicated to the objective analysis of baseball. The site features a number of stats, and we provide a lot of articles using those stats to various ends, right, to provide objective analysis. We have been contracted. We have been requested by the good people of Homestand Sports to provide weekly objective analysis on the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, that sounds like something like the Pitch.
Something like the Pitch, okay. Now, I mentioned Homestand Sports. Homestand Sports in particular is known for facilitating a group of events called Pitch Talks, Pitch Talks events. Can you explain what a Pitch Talk is, Dave Cameron?
Sure. So I went to the Pitch Talks event in Washington, D.C. last week. So it is generally a gathering of baseball fans who want to get together and talk about their local team and baseball at large. So at the D.C. Pitch Talks last week, I did like a kind of a 45-minute Q&A with the audience and the host, where we talked about the Nationals and baseball at large. We talked about Bryce Harper's contract. We talked about what the loss of Adam Eaton would do to the team. We talked about Dusty Baker and Mike Rizzo and kind of things related to the Washington Nationals. So generally, these are located in a major league city, except for there's not a team in Tavistock yet, as far as I know. But generally, they're related to the local rooting interest, and so you gear two or three hours of baseball talk towards kind of an intelligent discussion of the local team and how they're doing.
Right, and some very cool events coming up, some cool Pitch Talks coming up. There's one in Chicago Monday, May 15th, starts at 7 p.m. That's Chicago, as I say, in Lincoln Hall, featuring a number of notable baseball writers and personalities, including but not limited to Craig Edwards from Fangraphs, a resident of Chicago, Rob Arthur, who writes for 538, Sahadev Sharma, who writes for The Athletic, in particular about Chicago sports, and Harry Pavlidis, who's also a resident of Chicago and does great work with pitch information. I guess it's not Pitch FX anymore.
No, now it's StatCast data, but his consulting company is Pitch Info. They provide pitch data to Brooks Baseball and soon to Fangraphs.
Right. Pitch Talk St. Louis is on Thursday, May 18th, also featuring Craig Edwards, who will be in two places nearly at once in this particular case.
If you want to get your Craig Edwards fill, mm-hmm. this is the month for it.
But also a very talented and analytically oriented B writer, Derek Gould.
Yeah, Derek's great.
There will be a Footy Talks, not dissimilar, but of course just about soccer. That's a Wednesday, May 24th at 6 p.m., and that event is taking place in Toronto, Ontario. And it features, if nothing else, many pictures of Sebastian Giovinco on the promotional material. So that's important. And then, perhaps most notable for our listeners here, is Pitch Talks in Tavistock, Ontario, that will be taking place at Tavistock Optimus Park, featuring, among others, Mike Wilner. And that event, as I say, is May 25th, 2 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., an all-day affair.
No, that is definitely wrong.
2 p.m. to 9:30
p.m. No, there's no way it starts at 2 p.m. I would guarantee you the show starts around 7.
The show itself starts at 6:30, but there's quite a bit leading up to that. This is a big-time event occurring in Tavistock. In any case, tickets are available at homestandsports.com.
Yeah, but if you get there at 2, I think you're going to be sad.
You're going to get there at 2:30, 2 p.m., because there's a Tavistock Public School speaking engagement, which is notable. Anyway, let's move on to some Blue Jays analysis. And we will begin by looking at the week behind us, during which the Toronto Blue Jays went 3-3.
Another week where it's not total despair.
Right, right. It's something closer to, well, certainly closer to average. That would be 500, but something closer
to
what we could, might have expected from the club at the beginning of the season. Of course, still not enough to compensate for the losses that they banked at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they're, what, now 11-20? That's not great.
No, it's not a fantastic start. Some developments with the team. I guess let's, first of all, can we do a status update on Josh Donaldson, who has been disabled with a calf injury and is in a bit of a holding pattern with regard to his possible return at this point?
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays, I think, sounded like last week they were hopeful he would return during this homestand. There was even some talk they might activate him from the disabled list on Monday for the first game of the homestand. He was with the team down in Florida because they were playing the Rays, and he's rehabbing down there at the team's facility in Dunedin. So he was with the team over the weekend, but he did not travel to Toronto with the team. And when asked over the weekend, said, you know, he wanted to make sure he was 100%, or at least close to 100% before he got activated. Made some comments where, you know, if he felt like if he was playing at 50 or 60 or 70%, he would have some chance to re-aggravate the injury and exacerbate his problems. So he doesn't want to come back too soon. I don't think they have, like, necessarily a time frame. There's still sounded like they were hopeful they could maybe get him back during this homestand, but that does not seem to be a guarantee. And given this was a problem that he had last September, and then again he had it in March, this is a lingering issue. This is not one of those, like, you know, you just have a little surgery and then you're fine and you're back to 100%. This is something that seems like Donaldson is going to have to manage, and so they want to make sure that they're not endangering the rest of his season by bringing him back a few days too early.
You know, calf injuries, I did not know that. I mean, I guess I suppose any injury can have lingering effects or can be difficult to manage. I know that Adrian Beltre, though, in the Texas Rangers, had a calf injury, what seemed like a minor calf injury entering the season. He played at least for parts of, right, the World Baseball Classic. He has not played one game this year.
Yeah.
What information do you have about calf injuries in their nature that might make them so difficult, I guess, to diagnose or to recover from?
I mean, I think with these soft tissue injuries, it's not so much that there's something that you can do besides you just have to hope it gets better on its own, right? So you can, like, rehab to some degree, but this is not a, you know, a broken arm where you just have to wait for the bone to set, or a torn ACL where you just do surgery and put in a new ligament and then eventually the ligament gets strong enough for you to play. This is one of those things that, like, it's on a spectrum of kind of how much pain can I endure, how sore am I willing to be to play at the professional level, and can I play through this? And so it's not something that's just going to automatically heal itself. So you essentially have to get to a point where you say, okay, I am not going to be a good enough baseball player to justify letting this be dragged out all season long, so I'm better off just taking a few weeks off and hoping this heals itself. But in Beltre and Donaldson's case, when we're in May, and they've both essentially at this point missed the entire season.
Now, you mentioned that Donaldson doesn't necessarily want to rush back. I know the team's in a bit of a curious place with Donaldson, right? Because, you know, while they at the beginning of the season appeared set to be competitive in the American League East, that has not been the case to this point. And, of course, lacking their best player in Donaldson makes that prospect even more challenging, you know, of winning the division or at least qualifying for a playoff spot. You have mentioned that there is a scenario where if the team appears to be out of striking distance of a playoff spot, that they might be incentivized to, if not enter a full rebuild, then at least to get what they can for certain of their assets. And, of course, Josh Donaldson is a powerful asset. And a healthy Josh Donaldson is an even more powerful asset. So I'm curious how the team, you think, is best situated in terms of how they proceed from here regarding this injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the tricks for the Blue Jays is, like, if they want to kind of turn their season around, they need Donaldson in order to do it. You're not going to win the division with Darwin Barney or Chris Coughlin playing regularly at third base. So they cannot really withstand a long-term loss of Josh Donaldson if they're going to get back into this thing. But at the same time, if they rush Donaldson back, and then he re-injures himself, not only is their season over, but potentially they've lost their best trade chip at the deadline, because teams aren't going to give up a fortune for an injured Josh Donaldson. So if they think that, you know, it's already at least potentially likely that they could listen to offers on Donaldson this summer, it probably then incentivizes them to be a little bit more conservative with his rehab and say, look, you know, if we think we're going to be trading him in July, it doesn't really matter whether we win an extra game or two in May. At the point, all that really matters is maximizing the return we get if we trade him with a year and a half left of control. We don't think it's wise to go into next year with his walk year, where we're unsure if we'll be able to keep him long term. So if the Jays think they might listen to offers for him this summer, keeping him down in Dunedin for an extra week or two might not be a bad idea.
Now, typically it is a practice for those of us who write for Fangraphs, and it's probably a smart practice in general when you're talking about baseball to talk in probabilities. The Blue Jays currently have a roughly 3% chance of qualifying for the divisional series, which I'm guessing is quite a bit lower than what they had at the beginning of the season. Now they have a 3.2% chance, or we'll say a 3% chance of reaching the divisional series. If we want to calculate the odds, the probability that they'll trade Josh Donaldson, do we take 100% and minus whatever their odds are of getting into the divisional series, and then that's it? Or is it a little bit more nuanced than that?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely scenarios in which they wouldn't make the playoffs, but they would have kept Donaldson. So if they go on a tear and win like 15 of their next 17 or something like that, mm-hmm. and get themselves back over 500, then they're probably not selling him. Even if that stretch might not be enough to get them back into the postseason, it could get them back into contention. So you're probably looking at like anything north of 85 wins, they're probably not trading Donaldson, because barring some kind of like weird distribution where they win a lot of games after the trade deadline, to get to 85 wins or above 85 wins means they're going to have a really strong May and June and July, and that would be what would incentivize them to keep this roster together. So I think you're probably looking at something like maybe 70-60% chance that they would entertain offers for Donaldson, and then you have to consider the fact like that maybe they don't like the offers they get. Like they might say, right. The market for him is not what we expected. So then if you say, okay, 60-70% chance they listen to offers, maybe a 30-40% chance they actually trade him. So the number that Donaldson actually gets dealt this summer is significantly lower than their chance of not making the postseason.
A bit of good news for the Jays, promising, is now they, of course, outside of some of their very best pitchers, they've had some troubles, right? And Aaron Sanchez, for example, has gotten injured. Happ has dealt with injuries. That's been a problem for the club. A positive development, one that involves not necessarily using Matt Latos or Casey Lawrence, has arisen recently, and that is, in fact, the most recent game, Sunday's game against the Tampa Bay Rays. The starting pitcher was Joe Biagini, who I believe was making his major league debut, or not major league debut, his major league starting debut, however. It was his first career start in the majors. Now, it's not shocking in the sense that coming up through the minor leagues, Biagini started almost exclusively, but it is a bit surprising given the fact that he had never made a start in the major leagues. But he acquitted himself well and I think allowed just a run over four innings. And it probably makes sense that he would only pitch that much. Now, when I first saw the box score for it, I was curious as to whether this was actually Biagini really starting, being used as a starter, or whether it was a bullpen game and Biagini just happened to last four innings and pitch well. But I think it seems to be really is the case of Biagini starting. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the team stretched Biagini out in spring training to consider him as a potential depth option for the rotation. They've talked basically since they got him last year in the Rule 5 draft. It's like this is a guy that they think has starting pitching stuff. It's not necessarily just a two-pitch repertoire. They think he could go through hitters multiple times through a batting order. So they've talked about him even last year when he was pitching really well in relief as a potential starter long-term. And so I think they've kind of moved away from Roberto Osuna, whoever moving back to the rotation, and Biagini has become the guy that has been like the, maybe at some point in the future, if we don't need him in middle relief, we'll move him into the rotation. So once they had, their fill of Matt Latos pitching and they decided they didn't want to do that again, Biagini was the guy who kind of got the tap and said, hey, look, you pitched some as a starter in spring training. You're probably the most stretched out of our relievers. Do you want to make the spot start? And if it goes well, we'll give you another one and go from there. So Biagini obviously pitched really well. And I believe he's going to make another start on Thursday or Friday this week. And if that continues to go well, he will probably remain in the rotation.
Tell me about the challenges that face a pitcher as he moves from the bullpen. Now, of course, he's had a bit more of a middle relief role. He's made some multi-inning appearances. What are some of the challenges that face a reliever, and what do we know about the success rate, I guess, of guys moving from the bullpen to the starting rotation?
Yeah, the primary one is that if you're used in relief, you're probably going to be used in situations where you get to face primarily hitters who bat from the same side that you pitch. So if you're a right-handed reliever, your manager's almost always going to bring you in when a right-handed batter is up. You might have to face some left-handed hitters in your appearance, but in general, you're almost always going to come in and your first batter is going to be a righty, which is going to skew things towards a distribution of mostly right-handed hitters, or for lefties, left-handed hitters, where if you're a starting pitcher, you don't get to choose who bats first. You don't get to choose your opponents, they get to choose you. And so if you're a right-handed starting pitcher, there's a chance like the other team could just line up lefties, and you could, the first six batters you face in the game could be left-handers, and they could just stack their lineup. Especially if you don't have a good pitch against lefties, they're more likely to kind of play their left-handed reserves in order to really force you to face guys who are opposite-handed and have a good chance of seeing the ball out of your hand. So a lot of times these conversions have come down to how well you can get opposite-handed hitters out, and I think that's one of the things that they like about Biagini, is they think his fastball works against both sides of the plate, or, hitters from both sides of the plate. He's not just a sinker-slider guy. He's not a sidearm guy who's exclusively a specialist, like Joe Smith, someone the Blue Jays had last year. You would never start him because the other team would just line their lefties up and have batting practice. So with Biagini, the key is really going to be how well can he get left-handers out.
And it does seem as though, of course, frequently to get opposite-handed hitters out, there is it doesn't hurt, certainly, to have a usable changeup. It does look like Biagini actually has used the changeup more than 10% of the time, even in a relief capacity. So I suppose that's promising. Because, I'd say like 10% is kind of one of those thresholds, right? As, is this actually like part of his frequently used repertoire, or is it more of a show-me pitch?
But right, and if you're using it 10% of the time in relief when you're facing mostly same-handed hitters, you'll probably use it even more as a starting pitcher. So I think like average for a right-handed pitcher is around 20% change-up / splitter usage. Some pitchers use a curveball. You basically need something with up-and-down movement. That's kind of the hallmark of a pitch that works against opposite-handed hitters, is something with drop. So whether it's a change-up, a good curveball, a splitter, one of those pitches you generally want to throw 20-ish% of the time as a starting pitcher.
Now, I'm going to ask you in a minute about these two series they have ahead of them. But before I do that, I will ask you about a pitcher. I'll ask you about the other teams, but first I want to ask you about a pitcher who will be appearing for the Blue Jays, and that's Mike Bolsinger. He appears to be on the verge of making his debut for the Blue Jays because neither Casey Lawrence, and I think the team, they've DFA'd Matt Latos, isn't that right?
Yeah, he's gone. Yeah.
So Bolsinger will pitch. He's certainly not known for his stuff, but actually the results, it seems like, for Bolsinger have not always been bad. At least there's one thing you could say about him.
Yeah, I mean, he was a reliever with the Diamondbacks a few years ago, and I think the Diamondbacks sold him to the Dodgers, who managed to get a couple years of usefulness out of him. Certainly he's a guy who throws, mid to high 80s, so it's not an impressive fastball, but he pitches up in the zone, gets some swings and misses, he's a little bit deceptive. Probably his results are a little bit better than his stuff might make you think, so if you see him come in and throw 87, you're like, this guy's horrible. Might not be totally horrible, he's probably not going to be great, but maybe a little bit better than you'd think just on first impression.
Okay, now let us take a look at the week ahead, the opponents in this particular case. The first one is the Cleveland Indians. Of course, Cleveland Indians, a good club, one could say, as evidenced, if nothing else, by the fact that they made the World Series last year, did quite well in that capacity. And unlike last year when they were making their World Series run, they now have two of their best starters, Carlos Carrasco and Danny Salazar, both of whom, it appears, Toronto will be facing. One other quality, one thing that makes this Cleveland team different than last year's, is that they have a very notable former Jay, Edwin Encarnacion. How is Encarnacion doing, and how are the Cleveland Indians doing as a team this year?
Yeah, Encarnacion struggled to begin the season. I think he's not hitting for as much power as he did in Cleveland or in Toronto, and more surprisingly, he's striking out. I mean, this was the big thing in Toronto. Like, he was one of the best power hitters in the game in terms of strikeout avoidance, but in Cleveland, he's striking out significantly more than he did in Toronto. So not a great start for Encarnacion. In Cleveland, obviously, they still have hope that he will turn it around. It's, 1 month into a 3-year deal. No one's giving up on the guy yet. But he does look not to be quite as good as he was in Toronto. I think age would suggest that this is normal. He's 34 years old. Projections didn't love him this winter. It's one of the reasons the Blue Jays weren't willing to, go all out to bring him back, because they were concerned that, his skill set might decline. And so far, those concerns seem to be somewhat founded.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to ask you, does that sort of justify the Blue Jays' decision? Do you think this is the sort of thing about which, like, precisely about which they were nervous, maybe?
Yeah, but I think they didn't want to get stuck with Encarnacion as a declining, you know, bat-only player whose bat might not be that great anymore on a moderate payroll, mid to upper tier payroll, but not necessarily something like the Yankees or Dodgers, and have a significant amount of their resources tied up in a 35-year-old DH on the wrong side of his career.
Francisco Lindor, who's probably the... at least certainly on the hitting side, the star of the team at this point. He has nearly a 300 isolated power figure, which, you know, that's a slugging minus average. I think league average is usually about, well, this day and age, maybe like 160, something like that. His is nearly double that at this point. It's not exactly what we expect from a slight of build shortstop. I know that the number of players have increased their launch angle, et cetera. Do we know if that's the case with Lindor? Is he just swinging harder? Was this in him all the time?
Yeah, but he's one of these guys who didn't profile as a big power guy, but is seeming to tap into some power that, you know, was surprising in the amount that he's been able to get out of the small frame by hitting up on the ball. Travis Sochik's written significantly and frequently at Fangraphs about Lindor essentially having untapped power previously, just kind of slapping the ball around, but now kind of swinging for the fences more often. And Lindor, by adding power to a game that already included elite shortstop defense and speed and contact abilities, has become, you know, one of the very best players in the game.
Okay, the second series of the week, it's a four-game series at home versus the Seattle Mariners. I will say that the projections, the winning projections at Fangraphs for all four of these games are pretty good. For Toronto, they're all above, 58% or above in every case.
That's because you've never heard of any of the people who will start for the Mariners this
Okay,
week.
Right. So it is quite possible the listeners will have heard of Hisashi Iwakuma.
Okay.
But this is a team that has featured in recent years, of course, for a number of years has featured Felix Hernandez, has had a young, one of the hardest throwing left-handers in baseball, and James Paxton.
Also Canadian,
yeah. Has had Taiwan Walker, who of course no longer plays for the team, but a very, very promising young starter. I don't see any of their names here.
They traded for Drew Smyly over the winter, and he was really good in the World Baseball Classic. He was supposed to be their big rotation upgrade. He's injured too.
He's not here. And I know that the team also traded for Yovani Gallardo in the offseason. I don't see his name here.
Well, he's either. Actually in the rotation.
He remains in the rotation. The Blue Jays just won't face
him. To the dismay of Mariner fans, Yovani Gallardo is still around.
So I see Chase DeJong, Dylan Overton, and Ariel Miranda as the last three pitchers that the Blue Jays will face in the four-game series.
That is the recipe for scoring runs.
Well, I'm assuming this is not necessarily how the Mariners wrote it up.
No, this is like their seventh, eighth, and ninth starters, essentially.
They're already to that point.
Yeah, the rotation has been decimated, yeah.
Okay, all right. And just individual injuries to each pitcher, that's it?
Yeah, I mean, Fernandez's shoulder hurts, Paxton has a forearm thing, Smyly, I think, has an elbow thing. Basically, arm problems for pitchers. Not always shocking, but certainly the Mariners' basic plan this year was hope that Felix, Paxton, and Smyly all stay healthy. Currently, none of them are healthy. So.
Okay, right, so that's not good for them. Now, I do know that in the offseason, a relatively new general manager for Seattle, Jerry Dipoto, seem to make a point of investing in more athletic players. There was entering the season, they had essentially four center fielders, depending on how you want to frame it. But they had Leonis Martin, they had Mitch Haniger, a player relatively unproven and older rookie from the Arizona system that they acquired in exchange for as part of the Taiwan Walker deal. They had. Did I say Gerard Dyson yet, whom they acquired from Kansas City, and also Guillermo Heredia, who I don't know if he was on the starting, the 25-man roster to begin the season, but is a Cuban player who also has a center field skill set, essentially. Has it worked out, I guess, is the question. Has what could be a more intensely strong outfield defense, but maybe without some of the attendant offensive skills? Has this been working out for Seattle?
Yeah, not so much. I mean, Mitch Haniger was their best player for the first month of the season, but he is also hurt. So this is kind of the story of the Mariners season, is their best players are injured. Leonis Martin, who's their starting center fielder last year and then also on opening day this year and for the first couple weeks, he got designated for assignment very early on after hitting like 120. So he's in the minor leagues now after clearing waivers. So their starting outfield, Dyson's the only one left from opening day. He's now playing center after starting in left. So now they're starting like Ben Gamel and Heredia, who you mentioned, Taylor Motter, who is the utility infielder, has gotten some looks in the outfield. This is not necessarily the the lineup the Mariners were planning on. So they're patching things together with a, you know, a different plan in May than they were hoping to run with in April.
Right. Wait, I guess if nothing else, it's good news for Toronto, another team that has had its share of troubles, but is, I guess with the exception of Donaldson, is having slightly better luck with health recently. And it appears as though they're about to have even better luck with health because, if I'm not mistaken, on Sunday, Aaron Sanchez is expected to return from the DL with his nail injury, and he is scheduled at this point to make a start that day.
Yeah, the Mariners are basically going to have it rubbed in their face that they have no healthy starters, with the Blue Jays getting in a short-term injured starter back, and then the Blue Jays will be like, hey, look, this is what it's like to have a guy who throws 96, because you have guys who throw 86.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be like. All right. Hey, well, Dave Cameron, I think that you have fulfilled your obligation to the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.
I'm happy to hear that.
All right, well, allow me to say this. Allow me to say that has been Dave Cameron. He's the managing editor at Fangraphs. I'm Carson Sestouli. This has been the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast.